content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Hello, this is Suzanne Stroud for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the Triangle Business Journal. Shares skyrocket as Musk takes 9.2% stake in Twitter. Elon Musk, Tesla's chief executive and one of the most followed users on Twitter, bought a 9.2% stake in the social media giant, becoming one of its top shareholders just weeks after questioning the platform's commitment to free speech, according to a regulatory filing Monday. Twitter shares rose 28% in trading after the Securities and Exchange Commission filing showed Musk snapped up more than 73 million shares worth $2.89 billion based on Twitter's closing price Friday. Musk's investment in Twitter now dwarfs that of founder Jack Dorsey, who owns 2.25% stake. Musk tweeted later Monday, "Oh, hi, LOL," greeting users of the social media app where he makes many of his most erratic pronouncements, including news about Tesla, where he's CEO. Dan Ives, managing director at Wedbush Securities, said Musk's passive stake could be just the beginning. Rather than starting a competing social media platform, as some predicted after the poll, it looks like Elon has his eyes laser set on Twitter. Ives predicted Musk, the world's richest man, will eventually pursue an active stake, positioning him to take more aggressive ownership role in the company. "We view this move as Musk just further building out his tentacles," Ives said Monday in comments emailed to the Washington Post. Tesla did not immediately respond to a request for comment from the Washington Post. The company does not typically respond to media requests after disbanding its public relations team in 2020. In late March, Musk questioned whether Twitter rigorously adheres to the principles of free speech in a poll to his more than 80 million followers. Given that Twitter serves as the de facto public town square, failing to adhere to free speech principles fundamentally undermines democracy, he tweeted. Musk sold billions worth of Tesla shares in 2021, making much of his wealth, previously tied up in Tesla stock, liquid for the first time. Musk sold the shares after taking to Twitter to poll his users on whether he should sell 10% of his shares, though a trading plan that would have seen him sell much of the stock had been adopted weeks earlier, putting the purpose of the poll into question. Earlier that year, Musk seemingly took aim at Twitter's decision to ban former President Donald Trump, writing, "A lot of people are going to be super unhappy with the West Coast high tech as the de facto arbiter of free speech." Battery metal really worrying China is lithium, not nickel. Nickel has captured much of the limelight among battery metals in recent weeks, and understandably so. Wild price swings, including an unprecedented 250% advance over two trading sessions amid a short squeeze, and concerns tied to Russia's role as a key supplier have added to long-standing worries among automakers about securing enough of the material. Even so, it's another metal that's been causing concern in the world's largest electric vehicle market. China's government last month hauled in a whole range of market players for 2 days of talks focused on halting a breakneck run-up in lithium, the metal that's vital for almost all rechargeable batteries and critical to the rollout of emissions-free cars and clean energy. Lithium carbonate in China jumped about 472% from a low last June to a record high on March 15th, according to pricing provider Asian Metal. An index of global lithium prices compiled by Benchmark Mineral Intelligence has surged almost 490% in the past year. At the March seminar, which included industry groups, raw materials suppliers, and battery manufacturers, China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology demanded a rational return to more typical lithium prices. talks focused on supply bottlenecks, pricing mechanisms, and what officials described as the healthy development of the country's new energy vehicle and battery sectors. While similar interventions to manage soaring commodity prices have been common for coal and steel, it's a rare step in the electric vehicle sector and underscores Beijing's nervousness about the impact of rising lithium costs. The industry is facing a very strong headwind from cost escalation, Brian Gu, president of XPeng, told Bloomberg Television last week. The Guangzhou-based producer last month raised the prices of its vehicles by between $1,572 and $3,143. Vehicle manufacturers are suffering from opportunistic price hikes to lithium products, NIO's founder William Li said on an earnings call last month. He urged suppliers to consider the impact of higher costs on development of the EV industry. The sector's challenges follow decisions to slow or halt expansions and new projects during a two-year lithium price slump through the middle of 2020. That, combined with COVID-19 disruptions, means additions to the supply simply can't keep pace with rising requirements. Demand for lithium will jump fivefold by the end of the decade, according to Bloomberg NEF. Roughly $14 billion of investment is needed to finance lithium resource and refining capacity by 2025, plus another as much as $5 billion in 2030, BNEF forecasts. Raleigh Company plots Nash County expansion, new facility to employ dozens. A food technology company based in Raleigh is looking to expand into Nash County with a new industrial facility. Sinovatech plans to open its new 62,500-square-foot facility within Middlesex Corporate Center this fall, said President and CEO Michael Druga. It's in a rural region, which was important to us to get closer to the crops and growers, he said. But it's still close enough to Raleigh that we can pull from NC State. A lot of our staff are NC State graduates. Sinovatech uses technology developed out of North Carolina State University to build and sell microwave processing systems. Its subsidiary, First Wave, uses that technology to manufacture items like baby food, cold brew coffee, smoothies, and sauces. First Wave is the entity that will operate out of the Nash County facility, Druger said. Sinovatech currently has 30 employees, and the new Nash County facility will grow the company over the next few years. Druga said the goal is to hire 50 people within the first 2 years and 75 within the first 5 years of the plant's operation. The company will keep operating out of its smaller facility on Atlantic Avenue in Raleigh. Druga said using an existing shell building came with the benefit of giving the company a head start of not having to wait for the whole construction process to play out. What we like about it is it still had gravel floors, meaning that we could go in and do all our background plumbing, do all of our floor drains before we poured the pad, Druga said. He said the company is planning to invest $12 million into the facility in total. So we're essentially able to start from scratch without having to absolutely start from scratch. Sinovatech is receiving a $400,000 grant from North Carolina's Building Reuse Program, as well as tax incentives from Nash County, Druga said. Construction supply chain issues that are plaguing the industry are affecting Sinovatech, too. Druga said the initial plan was to open the facility in August, but that timeline has been pushed back to October. Founded in 2015, Sinovatech has attracted investor attention as it closed on a nearly $5 million funding round last fall. The company is also the latest tenant with the Middlesex Corporate Center in Nash County, which has room for a 1-million-square-foot industrial building. Andy Hagee, Nash County's economic development director, recently told Triangle Business Journal. Two RDU carriers now bidding for Spirit Airlines. Nearly 2 months after Frontier Airlines announced plans to buy Spirit Airlines, another airline with a presence at Raleigh-Durham International Airport has put in a competing bid. JetBlue announced Tuesday after markets closed a superior proposal that would acquire Spirit Airlines via an all-cash offer of $33 per share, valuing the company at $3.6 billion. Denver-based Frontier Airlines' offer was nearly $2.9 billion. Any deal could impact RDU, where all three airlines operate. Customers shouldn't have to choose between a low fare and a great experience, and JetBlue has shown it's possible to have both, said JetBlue CEO Robin Hayes in a press release. When we grow and introduce our unique value proposition into our new routes, legacy carriers lower their fares, and customers win with more choice. The combination of JetBlue and Spirit, coupled with the incredible benefits of our Northeast Alliance with American Airlines, will be a game-changer in our ability to deliver superior value on a national scale to customers, crew members. It's unclear how either deal would impact the triangle. In February, Brett Snyder, president of the airline industry blog Cranky Flyer, told Triangle Business Journal that Frontier's offer was unlikely to be bad for the region. In the short term, a deal could be good for RDU's other budget carriers, Southwest Airlines and Allegiant, Snyder said at the time, as the combined airline will initially be focused on integration as opposed to growing further. Right now, Florida-based Spirit has just a handful of routes out of RDU. They include Miami and Orlando, both routes that Frontier serves too. At RDU, Frontier also currently serves Philadelphia, Tampa, Denver, Trenton, New Jersey, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and Cancun, Mexico. Frontier recently announced additional flights are coming, including service to New Orleans, Atlanta, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, Indianapolis, and Las Vegas. JetBlue, based in New York, serves New York City, Boston, Cancun, Fort Lauderdale, Los Angeles, and Newark, New Jersey out of RDU and has no overlap with Spirit. According to RDU, Frontier boarded 28,550 passengers at the airport through the first 2 months of this year. Through February, JetBlue boarded 27,835 passengers at RDU. Spirit boarded just 10,758. Spirit is a relatively new entrant at RDU, having launched aggressively with 7 destinations back in 2019. Like many airlines, it scaled back due to the pandemic. 2022 Women in Business Lifetime Achievement Award winner Paula Brown Stafford. Being a Raleigh native who has earned 2 degrees from UNC Chapel Hill and has spent her career at Triangle Companies hasn't stopped Paula Brown Stafford from visiting all 7 continents, yes, including Antarctica. Most of her global travels were tied to the 3 decades she spent at Quintiles, now known as IQVIA, but she didn't visit the southernmost continent for a business trip. It was chosen by her 2 children, whom Stafford said could select how the family used the frequent flyer miles she racked up on those business trips. We had an atlas, and when I go out of town, my husband would say, "Mum's here," and they'd estimate the miles, said Stafford, now the president and CEO of Novan. When I told my son I was retiring from Quintiles, he said, "No, you can't." He wanted to rack up more miles. Stafford began her career at Quintiles through an internship that turned into a full-time job after graduating from UNC with a bachelor's degree in public health. About a year after working as a statistician in what's now the largest contract research organization in the Triangle, Stafford went back to Chapel Hill to earn her master's degree in public health with a specialization in biostatistics. Education, BS Public Health, and Master of Public Health Biostatistics, UNC Chapel Hill. Activities, board member, UNC Chapel Hill General Alumni Association, adjunct professor, UNC Gilling School of Global Public Health, co-founder of Habergeon LLC. Stafford's interest in public health didn't develop until after enrolling at Carolina. Initially, Stafford wanted to become a pharmacist after working at Car Drug, a Raleigh-based chain that was acquired by Walgreens in 2013, throughout high school and a bit of college. I liked learning about the drugs, the different applications and the different indications with each one, and then the interfacing with people, Stafford said. This interest in pharmaceuticals plus a love for math led Stafford to public health and biostatistics. But her career at Durham-based Quintiles spanned numerous roles that led Stafford to opening offices for the company in London and California and being involved in a meeting with the U.S. Drug and Food Administration Advisory Committee to get a drug called metformin approved to treat diabetes. The latter was a professional and personal achievement for Stafford, whose grandmother used the drug for 23 years after it was launched in 1995. Without ever having to go on insulin. It improved my grandmother's quality of life, in my opinion, the longevity of her life, Stafford said. It has always continued to be a big moment in my career that I can say that I helped with that. Another personal highlight was a trip to India to harmonize the company's data management procedures around the world. Stafford remembers being swarmed by the women in an office in India after standing up as a leader in the organization. Stafford's 30 years with Quintiles culminated in becoming the president of clinical development for the company, which at the time was the largest division of the company and generated more than two-thirds of its revenue. Nobody asked Stafford about her interest in the position, but she threw her name in contention anyway after becoming frustrated with the name she heard being interviewed. I thought, I could do that job, Stafford said. After 5 years in the role, which Stafford described as both challenging and rewarding, she retired and stepped away at the end of 2015. She planned on taking a six-month break from work, but that was cut about 4 months short. Stafford did some consulting work and focused on other ventures before becoming involved with Novan in 2017 and later becoming the company's president and CEO in February 2020. Novan is a clinical stage biotechnology company with about 35 employees that's developing nitric oxide-based therapies. Stafford said the company plans to submit a new drug application to the FDA this year for approval of a topical gel intended to treat a viral skin infection called molluscum contagiosum. From wanting to be a pharmacist and now being the CEO of a pharmaceutical company is not something I actually ever envisioned, she said. The timing is also something Stafford couldn't have envisioned. She took over as CEO of the company right as the world was beginning to feel the effects of the pandemic. Stafford was faced with questions over how to adjust operations, all while the company was preparing to meet with the FDA to move its drug forward. Novan, like many other companies, adopted a flexible remote schedule, which is not something she previously could have imagined. I am very much a person that thought everybody needed to be in the office, and that's just old school, Stafford said. There were other non-COVID-related learning curves as well. Stafford's background in statistics didn't prepare her for the science she had to learn about the therapies Novan is developing, nor commercialization procedures as the company prepares for a potential launch. So she leaned on her experience of working with partners such as CROs, contract development, and manufacturing organizations and other consultants. My prior life, how it's really helping is we have averaged 35 employees for the last 6 months, and to get a product to this point and manufacture it and submit an NDA, you need partners, Stafford said. I outsource a lot, and how to work with and partner with vendors is critical to our success. But these challenges could soon be worth it if the company secures approval from the FDA and launches its first product. It's hard to get a new product through phase 3 trials. It's hard to prepare an NDA, Stafford said. For a small company, it's challenging, but I'm waiting for the reward. In between Quintiles and joining Novan, Stafford wrote a book with Lisa Grimes, who also served in executive roles in CROs, titled Remember Who You Are, Achieve Success, Create Balance, Experience Fulfillment, that was intended to help individuals in their 20s and 30s by sharing the experiences of two women who are leaders in the pharmaceutical space. During that time, Stafford also became an adjunct professor at UNC Chapel Hill, where she lectures occasionally and provides coaching within the School of Public Health every spring semester. Stafford said these sorts of efforts are part of her desire to give back and help others along their careers. "I like sharing my experiences with others and helping to make it easier on them," she said. "I've been blessed, so I try to help others feel as blessed as they can be." How much is too much? Employers walk a tricky line on pay in the COVID-19 era. For Emily A. Neal, describing the current hiring environment as a candidate's market doesn't quite do it justice. Neal, senior managing director at Robert Half International, Inc., said the offers employers are making these days are often staggering. "The biggest shock with clients is when we tell them what the market is paying," Neal said. "They don't believe it. They have a budget that was written a year ago, and they've tried to find people within their budget, and there's nobody available." It's a realization many companies are experiencing these days, as the combination of low unemployment and soaring turnover push salaries higher at a time when the price of nearly everything else is also rising. Thrown in the rise of remote work, which means competition for talent is no longer just local, and it's clear why many businesses feel backed into a corner. Do they push their limits on pay or stay within their comfort levels and risk turnover? Many are choosing the former. For some roles, particularly those in the tech sector, Neal said she's seeing compensation that's sometimes 40% higher than normal. Offers 20 to 30% higher than normal are very common in a number of fields. How should businesses approach pay in this climate? Experts say that's the million-dollar question, but it's one that can open a Pandora's box. When a client reaches out to us for help in recruiting, and we tell them what they're going to have to pay, there's an aha moment of shock, because now they're going to have parity issues internally, Neal said. Anne Maltese, director of People Insights at Quantum Workplace, Inc., said there could be long-term implications for businesses that are increasing pay far beyond the traditional benchmarks just to get employees in the door, because it may not be sustainable. In a year or two, what will they expect of that employee because they have such an inflated salary compared to what the job was? Maltese said. As a candidate, Maltese said she would also wonder if their pay is being maxed out because of employer urgency, potentially creating earning ceilings down the road. Maltese is also seeing a greater move toward pay transparency expectations on the part of workers. She said employees are wanting to know more about potential earnings, as well as specific metrics or benchmarks that could affect their pay. "The environment is forcing all that to be more visible," she said. Between pay transparency laws, like those in Colorado, and a general reduction in confidentiality on the part of employees, Neal said it's a significant challenge for employers to operate in an environment like this. Neal said a recent survey by Robert Half found 49% of those surveyed believed they were underpaid, making it critical for companies to get ahead of the issue. Once your employee is in the mindset of looking for another job or responding to one of the recruiters, they're already thinking about leaving. "It's too late," she said. Because once you open that door as a candidate, the world becomes your oyster. Neal said the cost-benefit analysis shows companies are much better off being proactive to keep their top talent. That's always been true, but the risks are even higher now. You're losing a great employee and you're having to pay way above market to bring in a new person to backfill, and who knows how long it's going to take to backfill, Neal said. You are much better off addressing compensation before candidates start thinking of leaving. Because of those factors, more companies are conducting pay analyses to gauge where they stand. Heading into 2021, many companies were budgeting for 3.8% raises, but with some roles paying 30% above normal, Neal said companies that can't afford giant raises need to be creative with things like paid time off or other benefits. For a lot of people, time is important, she said. Sometimes a current employee is happy with an extra week of vacation. Durham facility gets green light to produce world's most expensive drug. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has given the green light for a global pharmaceutical company to begin gene therapy production at its facility in Durham. The Swiss drug maker Novartis announced Tuesday it had received commercial licensure approval from the FDA to begin production at its 170,000-square-foot facility. The facility's primary initial responsibility will be to manufacture the company's spinal muscular atrophy gene therapy called Zolgensma. The facility is beginning producing and shipping the gene therapy throughout the U.S. immediately, the company said in a statement. This Durham site is the second in the U.S. that the company has brought online to produce Zolgensma, labeled the world's most expensive drug at $2.1 million per dose. The site follows a manufacturing and distribution facility that began production in Illinois in 2019. Not only will this facility support the Novartis pipeline through the manufacture of both clinical trial and commercial products, it ultimately allows us to help more patients and families living with rare genetic diseases, said Christine Fox, president of Novartis Gene Therapies. The facility was first announced as a $55 million investment in 2018 from Avix, an Illinois-based biotech acquired by Novartis the same year that would create 200 jobs. In early 2019, the North Carolina Department of Commerce announced Avix planned to invest another $60 million into the facility and create an additional 200 jobs. Novartis changed the name of Avix to Novartis Gene Therapies in 2020. The company received incentives from the state of North Carolina for both investments, including a job development investment grant slated to provide up to $2.2 million in reimbursement over 12 years. This is in addition to another incentives package that could total up to $1.4 million, dependent on certain milestones. The state had not yet awarded funds to Novartis by the time the NC Department of Commerce released its 2021 Economic Development Grant Report last October. According to data provided in the report, the company had not yet reported the number of jobs created as part of the grant awards. In a statement, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper said the opening of the Durham facility reinforces North Carolina's position as a leader in the life sciences industry. The commercial licensure approval places our state at the forefront of cutting-edge therapies, and we're looking forward to continued collaboration with Novartis, Cooper said. Novartis received FDA approval for Zolgensma in 2019. The drug is a one-time treatment approved to treat spinal muscular atrophy for pediatric patients under 2 years old. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you have enjoyed it. I am Suzanne Stroud, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available on as podcast on our website.